It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
NYPD is losing the city of New York. And we have no leadership in the city of New York right now, from City Hall through the brass of the NYPD. The men and women are being pelted with rocks, bricks, cars lit on fire, and this is continuous. We have a curfew that's been implemented tonight at 8 o'clock, and everyone is still out rioting in the streets of New York. If President Trump is watching this, I am asking the president to please, please, immediately send federal personnel to New York City and monitor what is going on. If Governor Cuomo does not implement the National Guard immediately, then the federal government is going to have to step in. The NYPD is more than capable of addressing what's going on in the city of New York, but our hands are being tied. The rank and file members of all ranks have sent me numerous emails, letters, text messages, photos of how New York City is being destroyed. We have no leadership coming from City Hall. We are being told to stand down. This is the far left's version of broken windows. Everything is happening. We have a city that's being destroyed. The public that lives there is in fear for their own lives. I am receiving videos, photographs, license plates of looters from citizens of the city of New York while cops are being pelted. We had a police officer last night run down with a car.
Yes, that was earlier this week. That was Ed Mullins, who's the head of the Police Benevolence Association, talking about losing New York. And he makes the point that the National Guard has not been called in. That's because the governor, Andrew Cuomo, and the mayor, de Blasio, have failed and refused to do that. And so we have not only the attack on police, we saw those police officers being run down by a car. We saw others being beaten. He described to you more of the incidences, but real people's lives are being tremendously affected. There was a black business owner, an older woman whose shop was just torn to shreds, and she came out on the street and confronted the protesters, and this is what she said. Clip 10.
The problem that bothers me, you says Black Lives Matter.
How did you say that?
I worked here part-time. Plus, I'm a part owner of this store. You said Black Lives Matter. Why don't you choke me? I'm black.
Tell him, sister.
Look what you did to my store.
Tell him, sister.
Look! Look what you did to my store.
Tell him, sister. That's my, because I got their back. These are my
clothes
right here. Good men.
Look at the things you done.
Good men.
Look!
The Black Lives Matter.
We've been here all night cleaning up. All night cleaning.
And you got black people standing right here with them. Black
tell
people.
Me
right.
Black Lives Matter.
Exactly.
You lied. You wanted to loot the store. You needed money. Get a job like I do. Stop stealing. This is the neighborhood. We try to build it up and you tearing it down. What's your...
All right, you heard most of that. Sandy Rios with you on this Friday. And I, you know, it's heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking. And you feel helpless. Some of you are not in areas of the country that are experiencing this dressed-on assault. But you know, you understand that this is dangerous for all of us. It's a serious attempt at insurrection in this country. It is a serious attempt. Not only the attack against police, the goals of the Antifa movement is to completely destroy America. They've made that very clear in their documents. And yet, some of our leaders seem clueless. In the Capitol, Washington, D.C., just this week, rioters, 1,000 of them across from the White House, just separated by Pennsylvania and Avenue. And then not even that, because they broke down the barricades and some of them tried to get over the fence. They set the guard tower on fire. They tried their best to get into the White House, and the D.C. police did not come and help. The Capitol Police, as far as I know, didn't come and help. The D.C. police certainly did not. Muriel Bowser, the mayor of D.C., is not, you know, so concerned about this. I guess she feels like the mayor of Baltimore did a couple of years ago, that they need room, you know, to vent their anger. The president of the United States and his family are in that White House, and yet they would not come to his defense. And so the Secret Service had about 60 of their members wounded in that fight. Okay, so the president the next day decides, because they also set fire to St. John's Episcopal Church, which is right across from the White House. It's used by every president since, I believe, Madison. It's the place they go for a service right before they are inaugurated, or they take their office as president. And so the president took an entourage. They walked. They cleared out the protesters. They walked across the street. They crossed Lafayette Park, and they went in front of St. John's, the president held up a Bible. He didn't really even say anything. He just held up the Bible. Well, you would have thought the president had held up, you know, an AR-15 rifle. The Bible was the topic of discussion and ridicule. The president just did a photo op, and he displaced those protesters. They actually had the audacity to clear out those protesters who were, you know, not rioting. They were just peaceful, of course, at that time of day. And then the narrative is that they used a military helicopter, and that they tear gassed these protesters, which turned out not to be true. And then incredible backlash. The bishop that oversees that church spoke up, and this is what she said, clip 10.
The president just used a Bible, the most sacred text of the Judeo-Christian tradition, and one of the churches of my diocese, without permission, as a backdrop for a message antithetical to the teachings of Jesus. I am outraged. The president did not pray when he came to St. John's, nor, as you just articulated, did he acknowledge the agony of our country right now, and in particular that of the people of color in our nation.
So again, we have outrage against President Trump because he held up a Bible at the Episcopal Church. Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, the third in line to be president, by the way, weighed in because she had some opinions about this, too. And so she decided she would hold up a Bible and quote scripture. Here's Nancy Pelosi.
Some people came out and beat them so they could clear the area so the president could come out and go forward. What is that? That has no place. And it's time for us to do away with that. A time to heal. The book of Ecclesiastes.
So according to Nancy Pelosi, the whoever was, you know, patrolling the park beat the protesters. And then, of course, they unleashed a pepper spray, according to others. But now we know that that's not true. But, of course, it had to be true. And for those that listened and didn't hear any correction, it was true. And then I think the bottom of all of it was when the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, felt the need, Defense Secretary Mark Esper, to make a statement just this week after this all happened, after he was with the president at St. John's. He was so embarrassed by what had happened, how thoroughly embarrassing to go with the president across Lafayette Park and have the president pose in front of the church with a Bible. How embarrassing, so embarrassing that the Secretary of Defense went before the American people, and this is what he said.
I've always believed and continue to believe that the National Guard is best suited for performing domestic support to civil authorities in these situations in support of local law enforcement. I say this not only as Secretary of Defense, but also as a former soldier and a former member of the National Guard. The option to use active duty forces in a law enforcement role should only be used as a matter of last resort, and only in the most urgent and dire of situations. We are not in one of those situations now. I do not support invoking the Insurrection Act. Last night, a story came out based on a background interview I did earlier in the day It focused on the events last Monday evening in Lafayette Park, and I found it to be inaccurate in parts. So I want to state very clearly for all to hear my account of what happened that Monday afternoon. I did know that following the president's remarks on Monday evening, that many of us were going to join President Trump and review the damage in Lafayette Park and at St. John's Episcopal Church. What I was not aware of was exactly where we were going when we arrived at the church and what the plans were once we got there. It was also my aim and General Milley's to meet with and thank the members of the National Guard who were on duty that evening in the park.
All right, I've had enough. It is something the president likes to do. But I can't stand it. I honestly can't stand it. Who cares? Who cares what the defense secretary thinks in a public forum like that? That is a message that he should be delivering to his commander in chief. Commander and chief, the commander of Mark Espy, the defense secretary, who is telling us, because of course he would know better, that we are not in one of those situations. Really? When your secretary of defense has to make excuses, feels sad and sorry and embarrassed that he walked with the president across that park and while the president stood holding a Bible, and that he didn't know they were going to do that. He had no idea. He had no idea. And saying, really, defying the president publicly about the notion of sending in the National Guard, disputing the commander-in-chief publicly, to me, that's insubordination. I'm stunned by this. And then add to that another story that came out just a few days ago, and that is that prominent veterans are admonishing some of our troops, to lay down your arms, ignore the president's orders. Should and will, the question is asked in the Washington Times, should and will rank-and-file troops obey the commander-in-chief if they are ordered to round up American citizens on the streets of New York, Louisville, or Chicago? Some prominent veterans and lawmakers on Capitol Hill are calling on service members to lay down your arms and defy Mr. Trump's orders should he invoke the 1807 Insurrection Act and seek to move tanks and personnel to major metropolitan areas as civil unrest grows after the Memorial Day death of George Floyd during a confrontation with Minneapolis police. This has long ceased to be simply about the tragic death of George Floyd. It's certainly not about racism. It is about insurrection. Perhaps our Secretary of Defense is clueless about the things that I tell you about every day, about who Antifa is, about what their goals are, about how organized they are, how they want to bring down this country. They're very clear about it. We have their manuals. We have their instructions. How sophisticated their communication devices are, how this seems to be orchestrated all over the country. Bernard Kirk, who used to be the police chief in New York City, has been wailing on this. This is coordinated effort. We have to stop them. The president, of course, declared Antifa a terrorist organization. Maybe we should ask, you know, the Secretary of Defense if he thought that was okay. You know, maybe he disagrees, and of course we should all listen to him. I'm telling you, this is very, very dangerous. This is insurrection. We are watching the voices, the opponents of the president, whether they are in Congress, the Senate, or the House, in the Pentagon. The Pentagon is a cesspool of opposition to President Trump. And you know what? It's not just about President Trump. It's about this country. Loyalty to this country. Look what's happening on the streets of our cities. Look what's happening to our businesses. Look what's happening to innocent people who are being beaten within an inch of their lives by these lawless Antifa protesters, insurrectionists. Something has to be done. I'm sorry that the Secretary of Defense doesn't really want to defend his country and wants to defy his commander-in-chief. We must stay the course here. It's going to get rough, and we've got to be ready for it. Coming up next, Star Parker is going to talk to us about the implications for the black community of the death of George Floyd and all the surrounding events following that. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Well, I would have to say it is the culmination of just decades of indifference toward a very real problem in the Black community. The indifference that people have to repeated shootings of Black Americans, unarmed Black Americans, by white police officers who don't seem to have been trained very well. Or that they have like a personal animus against minorities and people of color. This seems to be a trend that is so stubborn, and it won't stop. And these are people that really have no other voice now. They don't get the political power or the financial power to change the circumstances. So what are they going to do? The rioting is the voices of people who have no voice. That's how they made their presence known. I just remember seeing this sign that someone held up in Minneapolis that said, "Can you hear us now?"
Yeah.
I think that's a very, very, very poignant statement.
Now that's the voice of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the basketball great, commenting earlier this week on CNN. I actually thought his remarks were pretty measured. But he's, of course, responding and giving his honest assessment of what's happening on the streets after the death of George Floyd at the hands of the policeman in Minneapolis. Sandy Rios back with you. I have a special guest this morning. She's a good friend of mine, and I can't honestly wait to talk to her about all of this. Her name is Star Parker. She is the founder and president of the Center for Urban Renewal and Education. It's based in D.C. It's a public policy institute that promotes market-based solutions to fight poverty. There's so much to say about Star. She's spoken at several hundred college campuses. She's a syndicated columnist with Creators. She's just been everywhere for a long time. She was raised in the hood, or at least on welfare. And her story and her testimony is amazing. And Star has been writing and speaking about really what I think are principles, again, that have no notion of race. They're just common sense principles that we all embrace. I can't embrace and what have made the country great. And by the way, Star, her uncanny ability to see and analyze things never ceases to amaze me. And so I want to know what she thinks today. Star, thanks for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. It's good to be with you, Sandy.
Hey, Star, I know you're right. You're in the, well, I don't say the center of D.C., but you're certainly in the center of the trouble. You live there in a high rise, and your office is right there. So, first of all, what have you seen? I mean, what have you been seeing where you are?
What I saw last night in particular was the president of our great country stop the arms war that was declared against our great country by speaking into this issue and then walking across Lafayette Park and standing in front of a historical church where presidents throughout our history have gone after they've been inaugurated to get one moment with their family before they began their presidential adventure. And he held up a Bible. So he put an end to the arms war that the left has declared on this country, or were attempting to declare. But make no mistake, the culture war is not over. That was one battle that the left decided to use an opportunity, a very tragic opportunity, to push this country into the civil war that they know might be inevitable if we don't battle in the voting booth yet once again and declare that this country is going to be biblical and free, not secular and statist. So that's what I saw. The result of 5 days, a mayor who decided to broadcast through Twitter that the president is cowering and hiding in the White House, and then allowed in a closed nation's capital those aggressive, uncivilized human beings to go out and destroy our nation's capital. She set the curfew at 11 o'clock. Keep in mind, while the rest of the country is reopening in COVID, some are in phase one, some in phase two, Washington, D.C. is not even in phase one. I suppose the Congress is non-essential because they are not here full-time and neither are their staff. So what has happened is she unleashed on this nation's capital this very aggressive Antifa Black Lives Matter hard left and allowed them to totally destroy the city. So to your question, yeah, I have plenty of pictures of what this is all about. I rarely saw the name George Floyd, but I sure saw a lot and took a lot of pictures against Donald Trump, against the rich, and we have an opportunity to revisit this.
Star,
but I do want to talk about, unless you had a question right now, I want to talk about what you played coming into this.
Don't lose that thought. We'll come back to that, but I want to ask you, there is so much hatred for the president, Star. And my husband was just saying he was watching CNN this week just to see what they were, what they were talking about. And it was still this heaping of this is all President Trump's fault and this stoking of racism. Do you think that there's any chance that the black community can see through that at this point? You know, those protesters went in and started to, try to get in CNN in Atlanta earlier in the week. And I remember reading that one of them said, stop stirring things, stop making people angry. And he was not a person on our side of the aisle. So I'm just wondering, do you think there's any chance that this could be so over the top that some people might realize it's over the top?
It depends. This is not about race. What we're dealing with as a nation right now. This is not about police brutality. This is about power. This is the same challenge we had in our country's history in 1850 and in 1950. We have to decide who we are going to be. This is the noise that comes before we either battle in the voting booth. I mean, let's face it, it kind of got darker in both of those times. In 1850, it led us into a civil war. 10 years later, in 1950, it led us into a civil rights movement. 10 years later, where we ended up with one president dead, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. dead, and then one running for office, Kennedy, dead, and then all of the nation explode by 1968. It depends. It depends on what we're going to do with this. You know, the messaging, as African-Americans, the messaging that, you played just now, the video. This is not true that these are just people that have no voice. That is not true. It's the left that thinks this country is racist or use race for their agenda. It's the left that goes about every day looking for racism. It's the left that has institutionalized the perception of racism into our entire system post the civil rights era. Every system, educational system, our market system, every place we go now in our life, all of our institutions are looked through the lens. We are forced to look through the lens of race and diversity and inclusion. And these are illusions. Most Americans today are cordial to their neighbors. They work hand in hand across racial lines at their jobs, and they want to just be left alone, including African Americans. So let's go to your video, the person that you played. You know, they have no voice. No, they have a voice. Their voice is their own life. The difference between slavery and freedom is time, and they own their time. That is their voice. The challenge is they've been convinced by the hard left. Now I'm talking about those that are in our most distressed communities, because most African Americans in the great middle class are above. I mean, only one in five is trapped in these distressed communities, and then you keep having the hard left pretend they have no voice. No, this group needs to do five things to be successful in America. Only five. They have a voice. They can choose this day what they want to do with their time. Five things they need to do. Finish school. Now, do they have challenges? Yes, because the union-controlled, government-funded cesspools we call schools in their communities are broken. But it's easy to fix. Let money follow children to schools their parents want, including church schools. Christian schools. Second thing they have to do is take any job and work harder than the person above them. But are there challenges? Yes, because unions have controlled wages. So that means you now have an economic dilemma with people that are unskilled. Third thing they need to do is get married. The data is so clear and the scripture is true that two are better than one. So much easier. when you're married. Fourth thing they need to do is save and invest. You spend it all today, you're right. When a crisis hits, you have nothing. And the fifth thing they have to do is give back to their community. Go fix the community for the person behind you. It's really not rocket science. But make no mistake, these last 4 days was not about race or police brutality.
Listen, you're echoing exactly what I've been saying all week. And I would just say back to you, and that's why you and I are such good friends. Evil does not, there's no monopoly on evil in any race. And there are wicked people everywhere because the heart is desperately wicked. And so I agree with you. This is about the people, and I would say Christians, but not just Christians, but I will say that those of us that understand God's word and what's right and what's wrong, and those that maybe don't attribute that to God but have good upbringings, we need to work together to solve this because it's us against the wicked, really, right now. I think the people that are on the streets exactly right now are just wicked. And you can see in the rioting that it's all kinds of people in terms of color. They're all so there. That right there is an example of what we're saying. It isn't about race because
one of the young women I confronted yesterday, not in an uncivilized way. In fact, I was kind of laughing about it and said, I pointed her out. Everybody's looking. I said, now, this is an interesting picture. Here you are, a young white woman who looks like the town that I live in, a little beach town in Southern California, blonde hair, blue eyes, your short pants on, and you're holding this sign that says Black Lives Matters in my neighborhood that you guys just destroyed. Because she was just right outside of my apartment building, which 2 nights before was totally destroyed. It was just the most interesting picture. I wish I took one. She just turned red and kept walking because she was going towards the White House, I suppose, at that hour because everything had to be cleared. So that the president could go in there and put a stop to it. So they made sure that all of us knew ahead of time to get on out of here now because this is not going to be pretty. What this mayor did the night before, she let it go on too long, so we're cleaning it up today. So, and that was the picture I ran into. You're absolutely right. This is not even about police brutality. If that mayor were serious there in Minneapolis, he would have told the truth. He would have got up and said, look, guys, this is horrible. To your point, you're talking about an evil spirit and this was horrible, and the whole nation knew that it was horrible. But what he should have said, but according to the contract he signed with his union, he has a 2-day cooling off period, and then he gets another day to hire a lawyer, and then he gets another day to come in and see our lawyers and then sit before us to be interrogated. So we're going to need 4 days. It would have been really simple. There's no right to protest. They have no reason to protest right now. None.
Well, I don't think most people know what you. Yeah, I don't think most. I don't think most people know what you just said, Star. And that is what you're saying is the mayor knew that there was a reason why he could not be charged with murder right away, and that was because of the union regulations. It wasn't because
and all of the left knows it. They protect the. Protect these unions. All of the left knows it. And you know the problem with unions is one of the problems with unions is the way that they have built their structure. Our poor communities get rookies and rebels. The unionization is based on seniority. So the higher you go, the longer you've been there, the more cushy your job. You get the pretty neighborhood. But the rookies who, you know, need to start out, they have to go into the poor neighborhoods. Remember Ferguson? Everybody looked at that young cop and said, what was he even doing there by himself? Then they get the rebels because, remember, also union, you can't fire them. So they just move them somewhere else. Where are they going to move them? They move them to our poor communities. And the challenge now is they're confronted with young, poor people who are 13 years old, growing up with a lot of energy in a fatherless home, no daddy to channel that energy towards sports and school, so that energy ends up in the street. And that energy in the street now meets up against a rookie or a rebel. We every now and then have to go through this. But let's keep in mind as a country that we have 800,000 police officers. They have to do in a year 2 million encounters. They walk into conflicts that we have no idea. I used to be a pastor's wife, and I'm telling you, people have issues. You don't know what they're walking into, and neither do they. So they're not well-trained. They're very well-trained. So every now and then, you're going to have an incident that doesn't end up how anyone would want it. But let's not pretend that the whole country is racist as a result, because it's not. This is not about race.
Yeah, Star, I'm so happy to hear you say that. I have to say, this has been my husband's a former FBI agent, and, you know, the furthest thing from a racist, and yet he's sat by and listened to, of course, he feels a kindred spirit with the police because of his work, to listen to the disparagement of all the police. And we know that the police are in such great danger right now, that so many of them are being targeted and killed, not just this week. I'm talking about, you know, in this last year, actually, you know, into the Obama administration, they became the target when Black Lives Matter raised its head after Ferguson. And so I'm with you. I couldn't have said it more eloquently. And so when we return, Star, I want to play for you a clip that we played earlier in the week that sort of demonstrates your point about white activists using black Americans sort of as their scapegoat to make their point. It's really pretty amazing. I don't know if you've heard it, but I want you to hear it. When we return, Star Parker is my guest. And by the way, Star, again, is a syndicated columnist. She's also an author. And we'll give you the information about her book in just a second when we return. Star, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This is not a black woman who's putting Black Lives Matter. I just want you to know that when... Right, but y'all doing that for us, and we ain't asking you to do that. Listen, don't spray stuff on here where they gonna blame black people for this, and black people didn't do it. Stuff like this ain't right. Stuff like this ain't right. That's what the problem is. We out here standing together peacefully, protesting without any problems. You got people of all races spraying on buildings talking about Black Lives Matter. That ain't even us. You got police officers coming to a peaceful protest spraying gas on us. We ain't even did nothing. Don't let the media fool you. When they see the vandalism on these places, know that it wasn't us.
We are not going to get anything done if we are doing it the wrong way.
And when you see stuff like that, you're supposed to stand up and say something. Don't spray on these people's buildings. That's not our message. That's not helping nothing. And then putting it on us, and then want to argue with us and say somebody black asked you to spray. We don't need nobody to do nothing for us. That's why we out here doing it ourselves.
Oh, that was a young black girl named Camelia. Very moving. You could hear, you know, she almost was brought to tears, which reminds me of that other video that we played this week, that young black kid, probably 13 maybe, who's weeping. And the policeman tries to comfort him and embraces him. It's just amazing. So you can see, as I said earlier in the week, that this is disturbing. It's disturbing for those kids that are raised in good homes and have consciences. They're seeing some things that are, listen, if you've been looking at the videos, you're seeing things that disturb you. And so this is a trying time. The policeman is on suicide watch. And you might say, well, he deserves that. I think it's just, as I said before, it's just destruction. It is a destruction. That's what Satan does. He likes 100% destruction. He wants to motivate you to do wicked things. And then he wants you, sometimes people then perpetrate their evil on other people, but then it's always to turn back on them. It is just a case of, it's just wicked what's happening in our streets. Star Parker is my guest. Star is, again, the founder and president of the Center for Urban Renewal and Education. And by the way, her latest book is Necessary Noise. Necessary Noise. A great book about what we're talking about. And yeah. Also, you can get that book at urbancure.org. Okay, so Star, just your thoughts about that clip I just played. Could you hear it?
Oh, I heard it just fine. And yes, my book is at urbancure.org. And yes, it speaks into now, although it was released late last year. In fact, I wrote it the year before that, and at that moment knew that we would end up in this moment. And I even was telling a few friends that in 2020 summer, we're going to have riots. I know we are, because we can't go on like this. Donald Trump was elected for this moment to pull this energy out, because Donald Trump has inflamed the cultural war, and this is good news for America. We have to make some choices here. We cannot go on like we are, the same way Abraham Lincoln looked in the Bible in the 1850s or 60s and said, we can't do this anymore, guys. We have to decide who we're going to be. Read in the scripture, a house divided against itself can't stand. We're going to be one or the other. We can no longer be both. We're going to be biblical and free, or we're going to be secular and statist. That's what that video, or the expressions you just played were about. This young woman is speaking out of a pain that she's feeling, an energy that she's feeling. And this is physics 101. Energy can't be made or you know, delayed. Energy has to be channeled. It's going to be creative or it's going to be destructive. And what we've seen is a lack of leadership in the harder communities that will take that energy, that anger that some of them have encouraged over throughout the years, of those that feel that America's stacked against them, that it's not working for them. Their schools are broken. There are not jobs in their communities. They really have a difficult life to live. And we have an opportunity as a society to help channel it into creative energy or let it become destructive energy. And for the last 50 years, it's been channeled into destructive energy because they've been convinced that their problems are somebody else's fault and they need big government to fix it. So now we have poured $22 trillion into a war on poverty welfare state that has collapsed Black family life and made matters worse. We spend $900 billion a year on these anti-poverty programs. It is a quarter of the budget. So here you have someone that thinks, my goodness, my life is in the control of politicians. I can't change my destiny. There's just nothing hopeful for me. And then they see this brutal video on the news. So they have energy. So what she's now describing is those that are in our society who will use that energy. These are the same ones that are forcing abortion clinics open while churches are closed in these poor communities. These are the same. This is the same left that makes sure that every opportunity they get, they further the agenda of secularism, heathenism, and big government. And what happened last week is they took a hold of this. Because these are the ones that understand that half the country doesn't agree with them. Half the country wants a government built on, not on this these vague notions of fairness, but built on equal justice under the law. Most Americans believe, half the country actually believes that the branches of our laws are grown out of the roots in our Constitution and that they were ordained by the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. The challenge for us as a country is a third of Americans don't believe that at all. A third now, the polls are showing, say none when asked about religion. None. They're the nuns. And the nuns don't like the way America is. They think that America is inherently and all the principles of America and all the founding fathers are racist and that everything is stacked against every, and they are the salvation. So what they want to do is transform this great country of ours. So they look for these opportunities to use poor people like this woman that we just heard her emotion and try to further their agenda. Their agenda has been furthered a lot in government. A lot of Americans didn't understand. And next thing you know, we have an election because Americans started inherently knowing after the Tea Party that we can't do this anymore. You told us forever that this is about race and equality and all these things. We elected an African-American and now matters are getting worse. We're moving into socialism. We don't want to go there. And so they elect Donald Trump. And last night, Donald Trump spoke into the pain of that woman to say, you know what? We're going to fix this. This is not about police brutality, although there's some reform that needs to take place. This is about broken schools and broken neighborhoods. And you know what's fascinating, Sandy? He's already been working on that. In fact, we were doing so well in the African-American community that I've even been working very closely with them on the homeless questions. Because when he said, what is that? We need to fix it. We began to fix it. We began to come up with the ideas. We know that this is not a housing problem, but the fact that he spoke into it allowed us to start moving toward where we do have the problems, the five categories where it does break down, so that we can fix it. This was he did the right things to put the economy in place so that we could fix the economy, even for the poorest amongst us. Even a high school dropout was working at that time. Then we had COVID, and now we have the hard left, these anarchists, these haters of America coming out and taking advantage of a situation so that they can undo much of what has been done. It's all about the election, frankly. This is just another battle, and the next one hopefully is in November.
Star, that clip of Camellia, that was the young black girl. Of course, the people in the car who were handing out the bricks are white. And she's saying, yep. You know, what are you doing? And so, and then they give her some terse remark. And we are seeing now stashes of bricks that are suddenly showing up on street corners, even in neighborhoods. And people are wondering, where in the world did those bricks come from? And the point I want to make here, I've got another clip I want to play for you. Because Bruce and I, my husband and I, have long talked about, you know, we lived actually in the hood in Chicago. And we've our lives have been pretty varied. He worked in with street gangs in L.A. And, of course, we both have lived a multicultural life. That's all I can say. And we find that people who are the most smug about racism are often very white and suburban, have no experience, no black friends, no, I mean, it's just amazing to me. And I would take it a step further. I think that, you know, we're seeing in these demonstrations that the Antifa, which is primarily white, are exploiting the black community. They really don't. Now, that's a broad sweep, but I don't think they really care. And I want to play another clip.
Well, wait,
before you do,
let me just speak into that, because the Democrat Party is behind this ultimately in the exploitation. I don't think that the Antifa and the Black Lives Matters, which are elite Americans of all ethnicities. I mean, they're not just white out there. This is an agenda, believe you me. But they're not poor people. So they have used poor issues and poverty issues to piggyback to further their agenda. But it's the Democrat Party that is ultimately behind this messaging, and why then you have Camille saying, I don't understand what's going on. But you're right. What they've even changed their strategy. They're not now breaking down just poor communities. Remember, they destroyed the Grove in Los Angeles, which is where all the actors go to take their children to see the movies. They were marching into Beverly Hills until Beverly Hills picked up their police and said, oh, no, you're going right on back down there to the Grove. So, and then my community here in Washington, D.C., I mean, they destroyed our Dior and Louis Vuitton and Ferragamo. This is not a poor community that they marched through. The only reason they didn't get the Trump Hotel is because there were big barriers to make sure that the 2,000 that were out in front of there didn't. So they destroyed everything around it, from the Saks Fifth Avenue to the or the Saks Off Fifth to the Nordstrom and the Macy's. So I just wanted to clarify that this, if you notice, this strategy is very, very different, and we should be prepared, because now they're getting ready to go into more affluent neighborhoods. Don't forget, they hate the rich. They want to eat the rich, as they say. And so they know that destroying black communities, the narrative from the right is, well, you know, why are they burning down their own community? So that narrative doesn't work for the agenda of Antifa and Black Lives Matter. So now they're coming after the more prestigious and what the working part of America.
This particular clip is this happened before the riots this week, and I know you know the story. This is New York City. It's a black gentleman who's going. He's like a bird watcher. He's going into Central Park, and he encounters a white female. And this is how it sounds. Clip two.
Sir, I'm asking you to stop.
Please don't come close to me.
Sir, I'm asking you to stop recording me.
Please don't come close to me.
Please take your phone off.
Please don't come close to me.
And I'm taking pictures and calling the cops.
Please call the cops. Please call the cops.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
Please tell them whatever you like.
Excuse me? I'm sorry, I'm in a ramble, and there is a man, African-American, he has a bicycle helmet. He is recording me and threatening me and my dog. There is an African-American man, I am in Central Park, he is recording me and threatening myself and my dog. And my... I'm sorry, I can't hear you either. I'm being threatened by a man in the ramble. Please send the cops immediately.
So the background on that is that he simply asked her to put her dog on a leash, because that was the rule in that part of the park because of the birds. It's a bird watching area. And so she's a white, you can tell, I don't know what she does for a living. I don't know if we know that now, but she then calls the cop.
Do we know? She lost her job. Oh, yeah, she worked for Franklin Templeton, and she was very blonde and blue-eyed. And he put on his cleats and said, she's not going to dehumanize me, and I end up a statistic, because if the police came out there based on that phone call, he might have been laying there in the,
absolutely.
In the park as well.
Well, and the irony is, what I'm trying to say is that she is a white elitist female who probably, you know, is not a Trump supporter. And she uses her, talk about racism, talk about racism. He's not even touching her. She's like several yards away from him when she calls the police, claiming that he is threatening her and threatening her dog, using her race, his race against him. It really was a moment, I think, that exposes what we're talking about, Star, is that these white elitists are racist themselves.
Well, that could be true for some and some not. I think the bigger and the broader lesson we should see here is civil society breaks down when you have no moral code of ethics. You're going to have a lot of these individual situations. This is when you had people like de Tocqueville speak into this country when he attempted to find out, why do we work so well? So he looked in to see, and he's like looking everywhere. He looked at our institutions, and he's like, yeah, they're great schools, but we have those in Europe. People looked over there in the economic world and looked out of business. Yeah, that's a great model. Just how come America's so great? What's going on here? And he just went all across America, and then he said, aha, when I went into the churches, I found it. And, you know, what's interesting is and intriguing about the Tocqueville story is a lot of people don't know that it was a black church.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That is such a great way to end. Star Parker, my guest, founder and president of UrbanCure.org. Her book, Necessary Noise. Star, thank you. Sandy Rios in the morning.